Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about this private investigator who was hired to find this teenage boy who had disappeared for 2 weeks. Not having too much to go off of, he eventually finds some clues which leads him to a nearby city, and he ends up finding this boy unharmed and fully alive. But he is involved with a group of people, a street gang, and they are involved in some serious shady business. Realizing this is a little more than what he could handle, he teams up with the local park rangers, and all hell breaks loose. Now let's get spooky. Christina Robinson had a story that often brought clients to me. Someone was missing, and they had gone to the police to file a missing persons report. But while that had been done, there wasn't any clear-cut evidence that a crime had been committed, so there wasn't much for the police to go on. So off they went to a private investigator like me. In this case, Christina wanted me to look into what happened to her half-brother. Alexander Mitford, known as Xander, was a professional chauffeur who had worked as a taxi driver, a limo driver, and an Uber driver throughout his life, along with an array of odd jobs. He had been missing since 2 weeks ago, where, according to witnesses, Xander was last seen at a grocery store picking up some food. After that, his whereabouts are unknown. So that was where my work would begin. Christina didn't have much to say aside from laying out what happened. She said it all with a quiet, resigned air that suggested she wasn't all that surprised by Xander going missing. In my experience, it was a pretty common occurrence. After I went over my process, and she agreed with my standard retainer and fee, I filled out a contract and she signed it. With that, I was officially hired to look into what happened to her brother. My first step was to do some research online. The basics that probably won't lead me anywhere, but I always have to do anyways. Like many people, Xander had a considerable presence on the internet, so I was free to browse his social media to get some initial information on what he was like and what his interests were. Once that initial step went as expected, I wanted to check out Xander's residence. The scene had been pretty well picked through by now, so I wasn't hoping to find anything major. It was just a way for me to get a feel for the subject of the investigation. So once I got the key and the address from Christina, I headed over. Xander lived in an apartment on the third floor of a newer building on the outskirts of town. The lobby and the hallways were well maintained, and the place had a quiet feel. His apartment was very much the same, newer, quiet, and well maintained. There were two average-sized rooms, one bathroom, kitchen, dining room, sitting room, and several closets. The apartment was very functional, with little immediately apparent to indicate interests or hobbies. But that didn't mean Xander didn't have them. They just weren't obvious here. The kitchen cabinets held the usual array of canned goods and things most people, myself included, keep in the kitchen. The fridge was the same story. Then I strolled to the bathroom and switched on the light. Like everything else, it was modern and functional. A thick white shower curtain covered the dual shower and bathtub, and a green towel hung on the metal towel rod. I made sure to note the single, well-used toothbrush by the sink, as it meant Xander hadn't grabbed it for the use on a trip. I switched off the light and went through the bedroom with the adjoining closet. It was just as unremarkable as everything else. I kept an eye out for something like a planner or a schedule, but nothing turned up. I was just about to close up and head out when I took one last look around and noticed something. The fridge itself was shiny metal and brand new. It held the usual collection of unremarkable magnets, many of which were related to popular media franchises. But there was a single magnet that stood out. A picture of a town with the name Limestone Ridge on it in elegant script. Bingo. I took a picture of the magnet before I locked Xander's apartment back up. Heading home to my own condo, I did a little quick internet search. Limestone Ridge was located several hours away, and it was home to a massive state park. Interesting for sure. So after I had done plenty of initial research on the town, it was time to do some in-person investigating. I settled on a local hotel close to town. And once that was done, all that was left was to drive to the Limestone Ridge. After a decent night's sleep, I headed out early the next morning. The drive itself was unremarkable, full of the usual tourist traps and fast food stops along miles and miles of roadway. But the drive, as it usually does, gave me plenty of time to think. I didn't think Xander had run away. The case just didn't give me that vibe. There was no doubt someone, or maybe even a few people, knew what happened. It was only the matter of getting them to talk. And to do that, I had to figure out exactly why they hadn't said anything before. It was early afternoon by the time I arrived at the sign announcing Limestone Ridge was just ahead. The town itself was ordinary enough. It looked like any other city with a similar population of roughly 50,000. Plenty of shops, restaurants, several movie theaters, strip malls filled with professional offices, and a mid-sized regular mall located in the center of town. I found my hotel easy enough. It was part of a typical chain in the center of town. Once I got checked in and put my stuff in my room, I headed out to a restaurant to grab something to eat. The town was filled with the usual assortment of restaurants, and I wound up at a coffee shop where I was able to get a sandwich and some coffee. Then, I went exploring at the mall just to get a feel for the place. As I walked in, the crisp autumn air felt particularly refreshing as the afternoon turned the evening, and soon enough, nighttime would be here in its corresponding drop in temperature, so it made perfect sense that the autumn and Halloween stuff was on full display. And I spent some time browsing, while trying to resist the urge to buy some latest addition to my ever-growing Halloween decor. The place in general was a standard modern mall that had almost certainly been drastically overhauled since the 80s, with the array of stores at your disposal. Personally, I preferred the old school malls. Looking at the general area, my working theory was that Xander had driven out here for some kind of job. Whether it was his actual job or something he was doing on the side or under the table was another matter entirely. The woods around town were lovely to look at, but they weren't exceptional, and I expected them to come with the usual stories about the woods. Missing hikers, scary bonfires at night, and weird things being found out there. Not that there wasn't any kernel of truth in whatever stories came with these woods. But every bit of woods come with stories. Because terrible things have happened in every bit of the woods over the years. They've had plenty of good memories too, but the bad get immortalized in tales that transcend generations and regions. Odds were good that Xander would end up as part of someone's campfire story. We all have the potential of being someone's campfire story, but some people are practically tailor-made to be discussed with a group of people while sitting in the middle of a pine forest around a campfire after you've just toasted marshmallows wedged between chocolate and graham crackers. With nothing else to do, I eventually left the mall, had some dinner, and headed to a nearby city park to see the harvest moon eclipse. I had been looking forward to seeing it for a while, so I made sure to give plenty of time to get the right location for a good seat, which in my case meant leaving the restaurant just as the sun was setting. As I headed there, I could feel the crackle of excitement in the air. All over town, people were setting up lawn chairs on their porches and front yards in the hopes of seeing the big harvest moon eclipse, where the full moon would not just be a harvest moon. There would be a rare eclipse occurring at the same time that would make the moon look super close to the Earth before it briefly vanished due to the eclipse. As for me, I was heading to Hathaway Park, where there was an open space to set up chairs and watch. On the way to the park, which was located just within Limestone Ridge city limits, I passed several cornfields that were dry and lifeless. Summer had come and gone, and the local cornfields had gone from lush and green to paper thin and brown. Soon, not even that would be left. In many ways, this was just one final community event before the last traces of warmer weather gave way to something much darker and colder. It had been warmer in the afternoon, but by now I had turned on my car's defroster. To see any lunar event properly, you have to remove as much modern lighting as possible. Attempting it in the heart of the bustling city is a non-starter, so driving to a more rural setting was much preferable. Which is appropriate because stargazing is as old as civilization is. We now have fancy equipment and modern technology to do it with, but we were doing the exact same thing our ancestors did by carefully watching the night sky. I arrived at Hathaway Park just as darkness was setting in. There was a special area to park near the front entrance. Then I had to walk to the open picnic area where you could sit and watch. A number of people had already set up shop, but there was still plenty of room for me and countless others. I chose a spot near the pond and set up my lawn chair that I had always taken with me on work trips. It took no time at all, so I had some time to kill before the moon appeared. There were some security lights illuminating the area, but I knew they would temporarily switch off the minute it was time, just like for the 4th of July fireworks. Which meant the only illumination would be from a few campfires set up nearby that people were huddled around. But of course, there was security lurking around like any other modern event. The atmosphere in the park had reminded me of the 4th of July in the middle of summer, but this was mid-October, and everyone was wearing sweaters and jackets due to the brisk chill in the air, which meant it was a crisp, clear night out. Perfect for a football game, or in this case, seeing a harvest moon during a rare eclipse. The air was filled with the smell of sugary fried dough and the scent of campfires as I sat there in my folding chair. I was in the mood for something to eat, so I walked over to one of the food vendors set up nearby and got a hot chocolate and a homemade apple fritter. The hot chocolate was made with real cocoa powder and milk, and the fritter was fresh baked and delicious. Once I returned to my chair, I happily ate and drank while I sat and watched the surroundings. By now, darkness had almost completely enveloped the area, and most of the illumination came from people's phones. The grass where I was sitting wasn't cut as often as in other areas, so it was longer and dewy. An air of anticipation hung over the area as we all sat and waited, with some people making idle chit-chat to pass the time. Suddenly, the lights in the area went out, and cheering started as people realized it was time. It immediately got quiet as people sat and watched, some with phones or cameras ready to capture the sight. We all seemed to be watching the moon for any sign of activity. It sat there suspended in the sky, looking no different than a normal full moon, Then, almost as if on cue from some silent signal, the moon slowly got closer until it seemed like if it got any closer, it would crash into us. But then, as suddenly as it began, it stopped, and we could behold it. The harvest moon looked exactly as advertised, full, luminescent, and so close it seemed like you could reach out and snatch it out of the sky. There was also the uncanny sensation it was observing us as much as we were observing it. You hear about ancient beliefs and what past civilizations used to worship and be afraid of, and the result is usually marveling at what people used to think. But on occasions like this, when the natural world does something spectacular, particularly at night, those beliefs seem a lot more believable. Everyone sat and watched as the moon seemed unnaturally close and full for a few moments until its left corner slowly went dark. The corner slowly turned into a quarter, then a half, then before long, the entire moon had completely vanished. People were quietly murmuring and snapping pictures the entire time until the moon went back to its normal position, and that was it. By now, I had folded up my chair and was heading back to the car. The security lights had come back on, and it was still quite dark out in this part of town. Pockets of people were steadily leaving the park at the same time. "What did you think? I thought it was nice," I heard an older gentleman say as we got back on the path towards where we had all parked. "I think so too," the man the older gentleman was speaking to agreed. "It looked almost unnaturally big."
"That it did."
The walk back to the car was punctured with bits of random conversation about nothing in general as I followed the crowd back to the parking lot. This part of the park was narrow, with the path hemmed in on both sides by dense trees, until we reached the front entrance where the cars were parked. I was halfway down the trail when someone spoke up.
"What is that?" some guy asked his wife.
"I don't know," she murmured. "What are you talking about?"
"That."
He pointed off in the distance towards a cluster of trees. I looked ahead to try and see what they were talking about. It was at the end of a trail and I couldn't see anything. But whatever it was seemed to be caught in a tree. A few other people around us had seen it too and were trying to guess what it was.
"Looks like a fallen bit of tree,"
a woman on my left muttered. It didn't take long before some people in the crowd got close enough to shine their flashlights on it. My legs wobbled unsteadily beneath me as the flashlights illuminated what was there. A human body suspended from the tree by a rope. Various people started to scream and yell as they realized what it was at different moments. It wasn't long before the cops got called and manning the area hustled to our location and quickly tried to secure the scene while instructing everyone to keep calm. I stood there in silence as the chaos went on around me for a few minutes. Once police were able to secure the area and take down the witnesses' statements from those who had seen the body first, they let everyone go. For the entire drive home, my thoughts were a hazy fog. It was only after I got back to my hotel room and locked the door behind me that I began to think. That body being found there was no accident or coincidence. It had been deliberately left for us to find there right after the eclipse. Hanging anything from a tree means you want it to be seen by anything or anyone that passes by. But the whole thing made a twisted sort of sense. People might not want to think about it, but whoever left that body for everyone to see was part of an ancient tradition that offered sacrifices or whatever entities they believed in, depending on the arrangement of the planets and stars. It may be a taboo thing today,
but our present society is in the distinct minority when compared to all the other centuries of human existence, where sacrifices offered to celestial beings weren't just acceptable, it was a huge event. The past wasn't just a different time, it was a different world. And it wasn't always pretty. In fact, it was often anything but. So many modern conveniences had helped gloss over the fact, but the past sometimes manages to rear its head regardless. This didn't come across like an act of violence. The body was carefully placed there right under everyone's nose. This was ritual. An idea as old as civilization itself. And as I sat there in my hotel room with the TV on, I suddenly remembered the other name of an autumn full moon. Hunter's Moon. I eventually went to bed and drifted off to sleep. It wasn't the best night's sleep I had ever had, but I slept periodically and eventually woke up to a refreshing but sunny morning. After I had a spinach omelet and hash browns for breakfast in the hotel dining room, I headed to the front desk. Hotel reception desks are always a potential goldmine for information, especially in smaller towns. Behind the desk was a young woman with closely cropped blonde hair and a string of pearls around her neck. If I had to guess at her age, I'd say early 30s. Her name tag told me that her name was Mia. "Good morning," I smiled at her.
"Good morning, sir."
Mia returned my smile. "How could I help you today?" I briefly explained who I was and why I was in town. Then I pulled Xander's photo up on my phone and asked her if she had seen him around town. Mia studied the picture for a moment before she shook her head.
"I'm sorry, sir. I don't recognize him at all. But if you like, I could get Liam. He's the night shift guy, and he may have seen him when I wasn't on the clock."
"That would be great. Thank you so much." Mia went to a back room and returned moments later with a strapping young man with curly brown hair and a beard. Then she briefly explained what I was looking for, and it was my turn to show him Xander's picture. He studied it for a moment before his eyes went wide. "Bingo."
"Yeah, I've seen him. At the park just a few days ago."
"What was he doing?" I asked as I quickly took out my notepad and pen.
"Just hanging around with some guys, like they were having a picnic or something. Nothing serious.
Some ranger was hanging out with them too, like he was their friend."
"What did the ranger look like?"
"Tall, definitely over 6 feet, well built, olive complexion, full beard. His hat was off, so I could see he had sort of sandy hair, probably about your age."
"Great. Anything else you could think of?" I asked when I finished writing.
"No, that's it. But if you like, I can let you know if I think of anything else."
"That would be very helpful. Thank you so much." I handed him my card before both Mia and Liam got a generous tip for excellent customer service. Then I went to the park to see what I could find. It was on the far east of town, just before you reached the highway. The park ranger who met me on duty when I asked to speak to someone was tall, with a weathered face and piercing green eyes that I could feel sizing me up. An occupational hazard, no doubt, I could relate.
"Paxton," he shook my hand.
"Dylan Farnsworth, nice to meet you."
"Likewise. So how can I help?"
"I'm a PI working for a missing persons case. What I've found out has led me here, so here I am." Then I explained who I was looking for and the ranger seen with him.
"That would be Cameron.
May I speak with him?"
"You could if he was here, but Cameron hasn't been around for a few days," he said in his most matter-of-factly tone.
But while Paxton was sitting there nonchalantly, I felt my stomach drop.
"I'm sorry?"
I asked in a tone that sounded way more unfazed than I felt. "Cameron has had the last few days off. He's supposed to be in later this afternoon. Oh, all right. Is it okay if I speak with him when he comes in?
Of course.
Great. What time is he supposed to be in?
2 p.m.
Do you mind if I grab lunch and come back?
Help yourself, I'll be here.
Great. Thank you so much.
I wound up at a local bistro that served fried green tomato sandwich with pimento cheese and some kind of sweet sauce for their daily special. It came with truffle fries. I was pleased with it. And I got done in plenty of time to return to the park to talk to Cameron. But the time for him to arrive for a shift came and went. As the minutes went by, and Cameron's time of arrival passed farther and farther by, I could feel something in the air at the park change. Annoyance went to concern, which slowly but gradually went to worry. The same way it usually does when someone who's supposed to be somewhere doesn't show. Eventually, Paxton decided to head to Cameron's to see if something was up after his shift was over. He lived in a duplex on the south side of town. It was an older building, but it was decently maintained. Paxton briefly hammered on the door, but when there was no response, he tried the doorknob. It turns out it was unlocked, and the front door opened easily. Once Paxton stepped over the threshold, he held the door open for me and I followed behind. The place was relatively neat, aside from the usual clutter of papers found on the dining room table. It actually looked a lot like my place. It was clear that Cameron wasn't around. But when we stood near the hallway that led to the basement, the smell coming from down there suggested that something serious had happened. And when I told Paxton what I smelled, he wasted no time in calling the police. When that was done, we went outside to wait. The two of us stood in the crisp fall air as the team slowly began going through the house. They eventually found the body in the basement. A quick check revealed it wasn't Cameron or Xander, but it would take some time to identify who it was. I was looking at my phone when there was a brief flurry of activity. When I glanced up, I saw the other officers were huddled around another car that had just arrived. "That's Hannah Culpepper," Paxton said as he stood there, police chief of Limestone Ridge. Hannah Culpepper casually strolled towards us with a demeanor that said that she had all the time in the world. She had fair skin, calm blue eyes, and long auburn hair pulled back into a neat bun. She was dressed in a black pinstriped business suit and a white blouse, and I could feel her studying me nonchalantly, like I was just a piece of the scenery.
"Paxton?"
She greeted him with a brief nod.
"Chief Culpepper?"
"Dylan Farnsworth, private investigator." I extended her my hand. She shook it firm but careful.
"And what brings you to our little neck of the woods?"
I explained to her how I arrived here. She took it all in without saying a word. Then she nodded and said,
"Understood."
"Do you think this is connected to what happened at Hathaway Park?" I eventually asked.
"Can't confirm or rule it out. But speaking candidly, it's hard to imagine it wasn't."
Just in the interest of full disclosure, I was there in attendance. Culpepper nodded again.
"I appreciate the candor, and we already knew that."
I suspected as much. That was why I told her. Didn't want to look like I was pulling a fast one. There's nothing wrong with pulling a fast one in this business, as long as you don't look like you're trying to pull a fast one.
"What's the likelihood that this body was left as a message to a specific person? Perhaps someone even in the same crowd I was?"
"The answer to the first question is extremely high. You don't leave a body like that in that venue unless you want someone to see it. And as to the second part, it's slightly less likely, but still quite probable."
That's what I thought.
There wasn't much more to be said or done after that, so I was left to my own devices for the rest of the evening. And since there was no other demands of my time, and I didn't feel like being shut in my hotel room for another few hours, I drove into the country around Limestone Ridge and found a corn maze. On my way, I passed several houses decorated for Halloween. The displays included giant skeletons, inflated pumpkins and other iconic horror movie characters, giant cobwebs, creepy animatronics, and scarecrows galore. And as great as some of them looked, that was nothing compared to how they looked at night. Definitely something I would look forward to seeing on the drive back, because darkness didn't set in until I arrived at the corn maze. There was a decent crowd that night when I pulled up, but it wasn't packed to the brim with people. In the field across from it, cars were parked on the grass in a haphazard fashion. I could tell the maze had been going on long enough because the grass was flattened, so I parked my car next to a minivan before I joined the legion of flannel-dressed people as they trooped across the road to the corn maze. People were huddled together for warmth as they chatted, or they gathered around the bonfire that was safe distance away from all the dead corn stalks. Definitely a good idea. There was also the usual cluster of vendors selling burgers, funnel cakes, french fries, caramel apples, apple cider donuts, and hot apple dumplings with vanilla ice cream. The fence surrounding the farm that the corn maze was constructed from was decorated with orange lights that loomed large in the brisk night air. Along with the smell of the fire, leaves and dried hay coated the air as I approached the stand to buy my ticket. The line was somewhat long, but it moved fast, and before I knew it, I was heading to the maze entrance. It was impossible to miss, because it was flanked by an orange wooden arch with more orange lights wound around it. When it was my turn, I ducked under the arch and began to walk through the labyrinth of corn stalks, following the incessant twists and turns along with everyone else who was wandering around. It was one of the better ones that I had been in, so along with everyone else, I was keeping an eye out for the giant scarecrow with the jack-o'-lantern for a head that marked the heart of the maze. The rest of the maze was marked by numerous jack-o'-lanterns that were stationed on top of wooden columns, silently flickering lights that casted shadows against the corn stalks, as far more atmospheric choice than a regular light. After some time, I finally arrived at the center of the maze. I briefly congratulated myself while looking at the massive scarecrow with the glowing pumpkin head before I headed back. But this time, the way out felt much quicker, and I was back at the entrance in what felt like no time at all. Since I was feeling hungry by now, I got myself a cheeseburger and some apple cider to eat. I just finished when I saw a group of people talking by the bonfire. For some strange reason, I felt like observing them, and after a moment, one of them turned to me, and my stomach lurched. It was Xander. He looked healthy. He wasn't limping or showing any discernible signs of injury, and he certainly didn't look like he was being held hostage. Being as subtle as I could, I took out my phone and snapped a picture of the group, taking care to zoom in on Xander's face. I was grateful for both the bonfire and the orange lights because they came together to properly illuminate Xander. The other people he was with I still couldn't make out. The most that I could see were that they were all wearing red, but it was clear they were all deep in discussion about something. Something that made them all look serious. Whatever they were discussing didn't last long because moments later, they slowly headed back to the parking lot, which meant I was right behind them. The group stopped at a gray SUV parked halfway down the middle of a row of cars. I was thrilled because that meant they were ahead of me, and I had no choice but to walk right past them on my way to my own car,
taking care to take a picture of the license plate as I did. Once I got back to my car, I looked at the license plate while I waited for them to head out. Local plate, assuming it wasn't stolen or something. Then there was nothing to do but wait for a moment until I saw the SUV's headlights glow in the crisp night air and watched them slowly drive off the grass. I took care to do the same, making sure to take my sweet time as I followed the uneven grass until I hit the road and kept a steady distance behind them. I was also grateful it was a single road journey because it made me keeping an eye on them less conspicuous. Following someone in a car was always one of the more difficult parts of the job. Tailing someone could take 5 minutes or 2 hours. Keeping an eye on someone while they're not being aware of it is very much an art versus an exact science, and doing it at night makes it all the more interesting. So I kept a careful watch on the SUV as I crept down the now darkened road, the numerous Halloween decorations lining the yards looming out of the darkness, with me just barely able to glance at them as we crept along. After about 10 minutes, the SUV rolled to a stop and turned into a driveway on the main road. The driveway was long and unpaved, and I saw the dust kick up in the vehicle's wake. I, of course, kept on driving without missing a beat while snapping a picture of the mailbox with the address on it, which was located right next to a security light. Then I drove farther down the road that went around a bend before it looped around and gave an angled view of the property, pulled over, turned off my car, and watched. The SUV went over numerous dips in the road until it stopped in front of a farmhouse situated right behind the lawn. Then the vehicle's headlights went dark and its occupants, which included Xander, went inside. I noticed that one of the people, a tall man, seemed to have keys, and he unlocked the door and led the others inside. I also noticed that the farmhouse was dark, and once the group went inside, the lights inside were switched on and the illumination bursted out of the windows. There was no doubt they were up to something, but what exactly that was, I had no idea. Plus, there was no actual evidence something was amiss, which meant I had nothing to go on. So I sat there for a while and waited for anything to happen, just to say I did. It was also entirely possible the tall guy with the keys was Ranger Cameron. I just couldn't confirm it. The group were all wearing red hats, jackets, bandanas, and hoods up. While I sat there and waited, I called Christina Robinson.
"Hello?"
she answered on the third ring. "It's Dylan. I found Xander."
"Where?"
she demanded to know. "At a farmhouse near a corn maze. I tracked him here from a magnet I had found on his fridge in his apartment." Then I sent her the picture.
"That's him,"
she said.
"What are they doing?"
"Just hanging around talking. It looked serious at the corn maze, and I have no doubt something is going on, but I have nothing to go on and no sign anything is wrong, so I can't really do much, but I did find him."
"Yes, yes, you did. And we're very grateful for that. Do you have the address they're at?"
"You know I do," I said as I sent her the info.
"Of course. You're the best, Dylan. Thank you for everything.
I'll stick around town for the night and head back in the morning unless something happens."
"That's appreciated. If there's nothing else, I'll let you go get some sleep or whatever."
"You have a good night, Christina."
"You too, Dylan."
As I drove back to my hotel, I called my old friend Eleanor, who could give me the info on the license plate.
"I'll see what I could find," she said after I read her the plate.
"Thank you for your help. I really appreciate it."
"No problem, Dylan. I won't ever forget what you did for me."
"That was my pleasure. Thanks again for the help."
"Always."
After that, I went to bed. I slept better than expected and woke up to a text from Eleanor. The license plate was legit and was registered to a James Harley. He lived just 20 minutes outside in a neighboring town. So after I had some eggs, toast, fruit, and orange juice, I headed over to visit Harley. James Harley lived in the ground floor apartment of a refurbished office building. The front door wasn't locked or anything, so I just got access to the building easy enough. Harley's apartment door had seen better days, as the paint was peeling in several places. I took care to avoid it when I knocked. No answer. Then I knocked a second time. Still nothing. So I tried the handle and found it was unlocked. Carefully, I pushed the door open and stepped inside. The apartment had been completely trashed. Drawers were ripped out of the cabinets. Couch cushions had been thrown everywhere after being ripped open. Appliances had been smashed to pieces, and papers were scattered on every floor. The apartment had contained the usual array of mismatched furniture for someone who was always on the go and only comes home to sleep or eat. Now, it only contained what was left of that furniture. I briefly walked around and surveyed the damage. The bedroom was even worse, as every piece of clothing had been removed from the chest of drawers and closet and laid on the floor. This meant I wasn't the first person who had came looking for something. There was nothing to see aside from a giant mess. So I left the apartment after a few minutes and went to a local sandwich place nearby and had myself a turkey sub on wheat bread with a pickle and some salt and vinegar chips for lunch. Once I was done, I headed back to the farmhouse. Everything was much more visible in the daytime. The farmhouse I could see was freshly painted white and had gray shutters. Definitely a cozy little house. Good thing too, because I was going to spend the next few hours watching it. With one of my audiobooks on as something to help me not get bored, I watched the farmhouse. It seemed pretty deserted. The only people coming by were people walking their dog on the sidewalk who didn't so much as glance at the house. So once I was as confident as I could be about what was going on, I got out of the car, carefully crossed the street, and approached the place. If there's one thing I've learned in this job, is that no one bats an eye if you look completely nonchalant about what you're doing. Looking over your shoulder the entire time while you try to be inconspicuous is just asking for someone to get suspicious. So I strolled right by the door, knocking loudly, and called out a random name. No response. So I tried the front door. It was locked. So looking as casual as possible, I strolled to the back of the house, where I noticed there was a wooden porch that led to a glass sliding door. And unlike the front door, it was open. I carefully slid it open and found myself standing in the dining room. Nice looking place, but it was sparsely furnished. It reminded me of a sample house you show to potential customers, all hollow and lifeless. It was the antithesis of the Harley apartment, which was chaos and screamed of a human presence. So looking around took no time at all. There wasn't much in terms of filing cabinets and personal items laying around. The second floor had amenities for guests like beds and other stuff, but that was it. I was just about to go downstairs and check out the basement when I heard the front door open. The sound immediately sent adrenaline running through my body as I had to think quickly about what to do. There was only one possible option. So, as quietly as I could, I crept back into the master bedroom, crouched on the floor, and crawled under the bed. I pulled my feet under just as the footsteps walked past the door. I kept myself as quiet and relaxed as possible while I listened for the sounds going on in the house. There was only one person, but I had no idea what they were here for or if they even owned the house. The footsteps strolled to the kitchen and stopped before there was a gentle click of the refrigerator opening before I heard the sound of a bottle being opened.
someone was having a drink. Several moments passed in complete silence, but it felt like whole minutes from where I was. The silence was broken by the sound of a phone ringing downstairs. It rang twice before someone answered it.
"Yeah,"
a male voice answered.
"Yeah, I was just about to grab it. It's in the guest bedroom, right?"
There was silence for a moment before he answered.
"Great. I'll see you tonight at the cave, Xander. That's right. After dark."
There was a thud of a phone being put on a counter. Call ended. Xander was up to something indeed. Whoever was downstairs finished their drink before the sound of their footsteps came back across the hall, and the steps leading up here groaned as the guy climbed them steadily. I took a deep breath and mentally willed myself to be quiet and still before he reached the top of the stairs. I hid there, crouched and mentally prepared for whatever I needed to do next as he started walking slowly just outside the bedroom in a casual, unaffected way. I got the faintest glimpse of the guy's tennis shoes as he passed the bedroom I was in and entered the one next to it. There was the brief opening and closing of a drawer before he walked back out. He continued down the hall and went back downstairs without so much as a second glance at the bedroom I was hidden in. Then the front door opened before it was slammed shut and all was silent. But I didn't dare immediately celebrate or move. There could be more people outside waiting for something. Or whoever was walking around could have pretended to leave while they were actually waiting to see if people were hiding around who thought that the coast was clear. Although it was unlikely, I'd hidden in plenty of situations, and I could tell when someone is a little skittish that someone may be hiding in the house, and this guy was beyond nonchalant. Plus, I could sneak out the back door, and instead of having to go around to the front, I could just go straight for the woods and take the long way to my car. So once I was confident the coast was clear, I slowly climbed back out from under the bed and crept downstairs. Everything was just as it had been, and the backyard was the same when I double-checked it before I slid the sliding door and stepped outside. Then, taking care to look as casually as possible, I walked steadily towards the woods lining the area. After a few minutes, I was firmly concealed by the numerous pines. They made the walk back to my car much more pleasant. I finally breathed a sigh of relief when I was back in my car after what felt like an eternity. Once I gulped down a drink of my own, in this case a bottle of water, I looked up caves and its relevance to the area. Only one thing came up consistently. The park I had already been familiar with had a massive limestone cave partially on its property. It's where the town name had come from. Now that it was clear I would be spending at least one more night in town, I drove straight for the park and asked for Paxton. He immediately came out to see me, and I explained what I had seen and found out. When I finished, he went to get the head of the park rangers and park manager so I could tell them. The head park ranger was a slim, no-nonsense woman in her mid-40s named Beatrice. The park manager was a tall, lean man in his early 50s named Gerald. They both took in what I had to say in silence, then they turned to each other.
"Cameron hasn't been seen since the other day. Something is up," Beatrice said to Gerald.
"No doubt about that. I'll call the police and have them send up some people to keep an eye on things."
Beatrice nodded approvingly.
"I'll bring in a few armed rangers to man the area. If we need more backup, we'll be sure to send for it. And Dylan?" She turned to me. "If you could stick around tonight, it would be appreciated. We may just need you to identify whoever this was, plus the young man you've been contracted to find."
I nodded. Of course. I had no plans to miss this. Once I called Christina and told her that I wouldn't be returning the town tonight because her brother was expected at the park, she immediately asked me to stay around and keep her informed. Then I went to the comfortable sitting room in the back of the ranger station, complete with leather couches, and watched a scary movie marathon with Paxton. When it was dinner time, we had a pizza from a local joint before it was time to get into position as the sun was setting. With nighttime not too far away, Paxton led the way to one of the park's jeeps. After he hopped behind the wheel, I got beside him and we were off to the cave. The view along the park path was incredible, because there was a clear look at the sun dipping behind the trees, which contrasted spectacularly with the autumn leaves. Eventually, we arrived at the entrance of the limestone cave. It was large enough to accommodate several people, and several rangers were armed and standing outside. Paxton briefly nodded to them before he turned to me. "We've got all the known passages covered. Emphasis on the known. I've worked here long enough to know that it's entirely possible there's unknown ways in and out, so that's what we're keeping an extra eye out for. We'll be doing occasional checks at odd intervals." "The first one is about to start now." I nodded. "Understood." "On the first check, they'd like you to go along, just to see if anything catches your detective eye." "Fine by me." "Ranger Green here will lead the way." Paxton gestured towards one of the armed rangers. He was about my height, had curly blonde hair, and was incredibly fit. "You need anything or have any questions, he'll know what to do." "Great, let's get started." The rangers switched on their flashlights, and I followed them into the cave. We all trooped along in relative silence. The cave itself was beautiful, but I didn't have much time to stop and admire the rock formations. Everywhere we went, I was looking for anything amiss. Our group walked along for about 10 minutes until we came to a large room filled with magnificent stalagmites and stalactites. It almost looked like the room had melted and bits of rock had been shaped like bits of clay to make what we now saw. I was just about to comment how beautiful it was when there was a loud blast from the other side of the room, and we all ducked. Moments later, the sound of gunfire erupted throughout the cavern as I crawled on the ground for cover. Once I was safely behind the stalagmite, I had double-checked to make sure I wasn't hit. I tried to see what was happening. The entire space was being lit up by gunfire, as Green and the others had drawn their weapons and were returning fire on whoever shot at us first. In this space, the sound was particularly intense and unnatural. I could barely hear one of the other rangers informing the others what was going on via radio and telling them to come to our position. There was another minute or so of steady gunfire before I heard more people coming our way, and the gunshots intensified as whoever was shooting at us yelled something incoherent and began shooting even more frequently.
"On blood, y'all about to get smoked."
I could now hear a large weapon being fired in addition to the numerous pistols being used. From where I was, I watched Green and the others slowly adjust and get a better position to return fire. Green crouched down, aiming his gun from where the two stalagmites formed a gap, and quickly unloaded the entire clip at whoever was on the other side of the cavern. I heard a shout of pain before someone crashed on the ground. That made someone else curse loudly before they tried to shoot in our direction. But just as that happened, one of the other rangers carefully aimed and fired a shot at whoever was yelling. Whoever swore immediately went quiet. The chaos continued for another few minutes until all was uncannily quiet. Then Green radioed his colleagues and they confirmed they were all okay, and the armed assailants were no longer a problem. A team of law enforcement officers went in to check, and they found that they had snuck in through a gap on the rock wall by the road. They also found some of their associates in a car, and they were immediately arrested. Among them was Xander. It didn't take him long to talk like his life depended on it when he was brought into custody. According to him, they were part of a group of people who had found the location of money stolen in an armored car robbery that happened years ago. Some gang members had orchestrated it, but they couldn't cash the money right away. But when the person who masterminded it all was killed in a shootout with police not long after for unrelated reasons, the location of the money vanished, and all they had to go on was theories. That all changed when Cameron, the ranger, stumbled upon it accidentally several weeks ago. He knew Xander, and knew he had ties to people who could help him take the money out and collect a share without drawing attention to himself. So Xander temporarily vanished off the radar and came to town with the group I had seen him with. They were actually members of the same gang who were part of the original robbery, and with Xander along, the job seemed it would be easy. Or at least that was the theory. Because someone got wind of what was going on and was following Xander and his associates. The body found at the Harvest Moon event was one of Xander's group that some of the gang rivals had decided to make an example of. The message hadn't taken long to reach them, but they got their revenge when one of them had gone to Cameron's place in an ambush attempt and gotten ambushed himself. After that, the best they could do was trash the Harley residence when they found no one was there. Harley himself never turned up. But that didn't mean we didn't suspect he's dead. What I had overheard that day at the house was one of their group getting directions to where the money was hidden at in the cave. That made it all the easier for the cops to get to it and return it to its rightful owner. Xander and Cameron were eventually arrested on some charges related to their recent activities. Their associates are all either missing or dead. Christina was sad when I told her, but she was grateful for my effort, and generously compensated me accordingly. After some time passed, I went back to the park so I could properly explore the caves. They were stunning, and to my pleasant surprise, a little Halloween attraction had been set up inside. When I was halfway through it, I saw Paxton keeping an eye on things. When he saw me, we laughed and exchanged a fist pump. Just another day at work for us.